meeting to order at 4:10. I will ask the clerk to take attendance.
Bartels.
Here.
Wrong. Absent. Criswell.
Here.
Tavares.
Present.
Lopez absent. On behalf of County Executive Metzger, Deputy County Executive Jamie Cipriano.
Here.
And, and Comptroller Gallagher.
Okay, so I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the August 29th, 2023 regular meeting.
I'll move that.
Any comments on the minutes and discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of approving this?
Aye.
Opposed? And now we'll move into our main agenda item, which is the 2022 external audit of the annual financial statement. If Kate Cummins is here with you, I'll go ahead and turn the meeting over to you for the presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you. Do you mind if I just hand out these other?
Thank you.
So we've went ahead and prepared a PowerPoint. We find this to be a little bit easier to digest than the full report. It's a lot of information in here. So the PowerPoint essentially will cover some required communications that we're required to have. It'll also include the 2022 general fund revenues and expenditures compared to budget. We'll go over the major revenues, so not all of revenues, but the major items, and then also the major expenditures in the general fund. We've prepared a five-year fund balance analysis to show you a trend, and then the county does operate other funds, so we did provide those for you as well, and then some debt service information for you. So, I'm not sure who's running the... Okay. Oh, sure, no problem. Sure, no problem. Thank you. So we have slide three. Perfect. Okay. So management and those charged with governance, the legislature has certain responsibilities as part of this audit process. First and foremost, just selecting and implementing appropriate accounting policies, making sure the financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with the United States generally accepted accounting principles. First, you should establish internal controls over financial reporting and then doing a regular maintenance of them. So periodic review, just making sure that the county has appropriate checks and balances. You must make sure that the county is in compliance with all laws and regulations and any contracts that the county enters into. Providing us as your external auditors with all of the financial records and any other related information that we ask for. And I do just want to give a big thank you to the legislative office, especially Amber, and then the commissioner's office for really helping us get through this audit. So thank you very much. And then lastly, and probably the most important, is setting a proper tone at the top, making sure that there's appropriate ethics at the county level. Not only does management have certain responsibilities, but us as your external auditors, we are also have certain responsibilities for you. We do have deliverables here, so we will be issuing an independent auditor's report. We anticipate issuing an unmodified opinion. That's also referred to as a clean opinion or the best opinion that you could receive. We issue a yellow book report, which is a report on controls and compliance. And then we also issue the single audit or report on each major federal programs. This year we did audit four federal programs, your SNAP, which is your nutrition, your TANF, your temporary assistance for needy families, your CDBG, that's your block grant, and then your ARPA revenue are the four that we audited. We have also provided to you in a separate cover the required communications to those charged with governance, which also houses your management letter as well, so any recommendations we have. We are required to communicate any fraud or illegal acts that were noted during the audit. I think we're all aware of the situation of the predecessor commissioner. Exclusive of that, which did not relate to the county, but exclusive of that, we weren't, nothing was brought to our attention of that sort. We did not encounter any difficulties conducting our audit, and there were no uncorrected misstatements, and then no disagreements. So on to the numbers. This is a four-column schedule. Your original budget is the budget that was adopted. Your final budget, the second column, that would include any budget amendments or budget transfers that were made during the year. Then you have your actual results that happened in 22, and then the variance with your final budget. I do want to start off at the third line from the bottom, that net change in fund balance. You can see the negative 9.9 million there. That is going to be what you anticipate using of your fund balance. So that's made of two components. The first component is going to be 6.5 million, and that's the appropriated fund balance that you included in your budget to balance the budget. So you're using that fund balance. The remaining piece of 3.4 is related to your prior year purchase orders, and essentially those get rolled into this year's budget within the original budget column.
Do you want to take questions as we go along?
Yeah, or? Please.
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
So when you talked about the variance with the final budget, so that, if you do that as a percentage, does that seem like a reasonable percentage of variance, or does that seem like a high percentage of variance?
It would be high, but you'd have to have your finance department do a separate analysis of that variance,
mm-hmm.
because the state and the federal government operate on a different fiscal year than you do.
Mm-hmm.
So included in that number would be state grants,
okay.
and some of those grants roll forward.
Got it.
20 years ago, 25 years ago, they used to have what was called a unencumbered grants, like you have an encumbrance. They used to have a grant, the state discontinued that.
Okay.
So you'd have to get an analysis from your finance department as to what rolled over is state grants, federal grants. You back those out, that will be your true variance.
Okay.
So the 50 million could be considered high, but we're seeing when Melissa goes through all the variances,
mm-hmm.
you're going to see a lot of variances for a couple of reasons. One, you're still coming out of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, last year when you put your budget together, utilities and fuel were skyrocketing,
mm-hmm.
and your budget had to account for all that. And the third was your social service programs were basically anticipated to return to pre-18-19 levels, and luckily the economy stayed strong enough that you didn't do that. So you're going to see some major variances this year, but it'll probably get better as the years go out.
Thank
so
you.
You'll hear a common theme as she's explaining mm-hmm. the variances.
Okay, thank you.
So on the third line in the second column, you could see that 9.9 jumped to 12.3 million. There were three major increases that made up a majority of that. The first would be there was a budget amendment made to increase your use of fund balance for 1.5 million. That was relation to the distribution of sales tax to the city of Kingston. There was about 700,000 use of fund balance to settle the sheriff's contract during the year, and then about 250,000 for some public defender positions. So ultimately, you anticipated using 12.3 million of fund balance. If you go to the actual column, you can see you actually added to fund balance 38.7 million. Going back to the top, your revenues came, you had a favorable budgetary surplus of 22.8 million if you compare your actual to final. Your expenditures, you had a budgetary savings of 36.7 million. That is your total. If you just take those two pieces, that means you have a budgetary variance of 59.6 million. You did have some other financing uses that were overspent by 8.5 million, so that brought that down to 51 million. So again, you started your fund balance at 101.5 million. Again, you added that 38.7 to it, so you're ending at 140 million. Not all of that is unassigned. It could be spent freely, but we'll go over that in a couple of slides. So what we've done here is we've identified major revenues. You could see about 78% of the actual revenues are covered in the items identified below as non other revenues. And then we've also provided a 2021 column for you as well. The first line is your real property tax. That's your levy here. So you could see that there is, it did come in above budget, about $2.5 million. Generally, that's going to be due to your deferred tax calculation, which relies on a 60-day availability period. You can see that it dropped $8 million from last year. So last year, your property tax revenue was $56 million. Again, this is just in the general fund. So we're down to $48 million. And that was really due to a different allocation between the other funds. You had $5 million more go to the County Road Fund, and you had $3 million more go to the Road Machinery Fund in your taxes. So that would explain the drop. You had a large, go to the next one, you had a large surplus on your gain of sale of tax acquired properties. So that would be like your auctions. You had a favorable surplus of $2.8 million, so it came in higher than what you anticipated. The next line, which is a large factor of the variance in your revenue, is you're going to be your sales tax. You can see you really anticipated your final budget, $146 million, but it came in at $165 million. So that's $18.7 million more than what you anticipated. This is a really good indicator of the economy. Unsure about what 23 is going to hold for you, but you still want to keep a conservative budget for the most part.
Can I?
Sure.
So, I mean, it's an indication of the economy, but 2021, our actual was 154, which is higher than what we budgeted for 2022. So, just to put sort of a flag in it, I really appreciate you putting the 2021 column in, and I'd love to look back at that line over the course of a couple of years just to see if we're historically under budgeting against actuals, because that would be something we are. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of almost rhetorical, but I think it's something to just be aware of. You know, in terms of coming up federal aid.
How's your growth rate for 23 year to date?
We're doing well. We're aligned with budget.
Because I know that we just finished Westchester budget review, and they're only up like 2.5% over the previous year now. So the last couple quarters have been down there. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're seeing a little bit of a correction.
From we're the up 3.5%.
3.5?
Yeah.
And we budgeted to be flat.
All right, so you have 3% slack already built in.
Yeah.
Yep. The next line is going to be child care revenue. This would be departmental income, not any state or federal aid. So you could see that it did come under your final budget. That's the departmental income essentially would go down because the county would have received more federal subsidies for the program, so you wouldn't really rely on those departmental income.
I think they raised the subsidy rate from 200 to 300% last year for people qualifying, so I think you've received more federal aid. And I believe, didn't they just change it effective October 31st to 85% of the New York State median? So that's going to, again, put more people qualifying for the federal and state aid.
The next line is going to be your earnings on investment. This would be your interest that you've earned on the deposits that you have. So 1.6 better than budgeted. We have seen that trend across all of our New York State municipalities just because interest rates have been so high. The next line is going to be the sale of real property. This is specific to the...
Can I go back and just ask a question? Did we do something also internally? Didn't we change something where we... changed our investments?
We opened an additional interest-bearing account at Bank of Green County.
Right, okay.
Yep. The sale of real property of the $5 million, that's going to be related to that Tech City East sale that happened. I believe it was a property that was sold by USITA. All the money and the proceeds are essentially reverted back to the county. You'll see this tie back in when we go to the fund balance chart as well, so I'll refer back to that. Your federal aid line, you originally budgeted 35.5. There were some amendments made during the year for 40, jumped up to 48.6. You actually only came in at about 37.9 million, so you were under your final budget revenue about 10.6. In that amount, there was about 4.6 million of ARPA spent. So I also wanted to point out to you that the ARPA balance remaining as of 12/31/22 is about $28 million. So that's what you could spend offsetting.
Can I ask one more question? Sorry, I'm going to ask a really basic question about our budget. Is there a moment in time where we actually reassign budget numbers, like mid-year, or do we do any of that kind of adjustment throughout the year?
So you can do budget modifications throughout the year. Your adopted budget always remains your adopted budget. That's why they're showing here your final versus your original budget modifications, but I don't think they go back in.
Do we do that? I guess is what I'm asking. Like, do we, like in nonprofits I've worked at, we've done adjustments quarterly where we look and see, oh, this program's tanking, we can't be relying on that. You know, we don't do anything like that here.
You can't readopt your adopted budget.
Okay. You can amend your
budget.
You can amend it, right? We don't do that though.
We don't amend it in the way that you're talking about, amend it in the way that you're familiar with, where
right.
Based on something new that comes up
right.
In the resolution.
So it's like a slow trickle of changing it throughout the year rather than a quarterly or a mid-year or something.
You're talking about on a prescribed basis, taking a look at
correct.
Where you're at against where you expect it to be at that point.
Correct, and then rejigging your numbers to make it work. Okay.
Next line is the opioid settlement revenue. This would be under your miscellaneous income. This is a new item this year. It was regarding the settlement that New York State had with some pharmaceutical companies. So currently, in the current year, you received $1.3 million. You're going to be receiving this over the next several years. So there's a piece of it that's deferred on your balance sheet as well. Then the last line on the identified revenues here is going to be your leases issued. $2.6 million came in. This is relating to the new GASB pronouncement that was implemented this year, GASB 87, for the lease standard. So these were leases issued or implemented during this year that essentially got recognized as revenue. So that's how we got to the total budgetary favorable variance of $25.4 million. Again, most of that was sales tax, the sale of real property.
Just in terms of GASB 87. So we're showing it as a $2.6 million variance, but it almost makes it sound like the leases didn't exist prior to GASB 87. They just existed, but it's now a different reporting requirement, right?
Good question. Yeah, so the 2.6 would only pertain to the leases entered into in 22.
Mm-hmm.
We did a prior period or a change in accounting for the leases that were entered into previous to, like in 21, 20, to restate that opening balance piece. But the 2.6 would just
Totally new leases, or could they be continuations of existing leases that were entering into a new term in 22?
It depends on the way that the lease contract was written. If you're extending a lease that had an option to extend, generally that would be included as part of the prior period. But if it was a current year lease, or if the lease ended, there was no option to extend, and you entered into a new one, that would be considered like a new lease.
I mean, I can't imagine.
Do you think that's a lot? That's a lot of
new
right, exactly.
It's not all new. It's also the receipt of the older ones that you didn't have to make an adjustment.
Oh, yes. Well, these are leases issued, though.
Yeah, but.
So this is all our leases, copiers, like everything. It's not just.
This is revenue. This is not the expense.
These are revenue.
These are cell tower payments if you have cell towers.
Yeah.
So this would be some of the current portion from the older ones, right? Because they took it out of rental income and moved it to here, right?
No, these are the lease liabilities. So this would be leases issued.
Because this is revenue.
Yeah, in the current case. So we can give you a breakdown of what leases make up.
Okay, that would be, yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Is there a schedule on the footnote?
There would be. There would be. Oh, so if you go to page 63 of the financials.
Is it? It's been liabilities.
Yeah.
Is the revenue?
It's a like a bond issue. The issue gets revenue and then you convert it to. So on 63, you can see the issue date is in that column, and then so everything.
These aren't revenues; these are expenses.
So the lease payable, just like your bonds that you issue, would be considered like a general obligation bond issued as a revenue on the fund level. It's kind of weird how the modified accrual system works. There's really no long-term people. So, for example, when you issue a bond, it would be bond revenue on the on the capital fund. And then you would convert it to a long-term liability during the GASB 34 conversion from modified to full. So this is kind of similar, but in a lease case. So it's like you're issuing a lease liability that you're going to have to pay over time, and that's converted to an asset payable at that point.
This total here, this 5.78 million on the bottom of 63, that is does not match the 2.6 million.
Correct. So it would only, if you look at the issue date, everything with the issue date 1/1/22 is considered the old leases that was what would make up your prior period adjustment, for example, your change in accounting. Anything, so you can see 3/4 of the way down, there's an issue date 3/1/22. All of those added up would make up the 2.6 million.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead and move on to So these are going to be your major expenditures. Expenditures are a little bit harder to get coverage with because there's many different lines, many different departments. So we try to do the best to get the most coverage. You can see we got about 57% here. Again, as Chris mentioned, there will be a similar theme as we go through with the budget being modified, but essentially was not fully spent. For right now, the Department of Finance, you can see the budget increased from 4.1 to 9.6. Actual only came in at 3.7, so you had a budgetary savings of 5.9. And that budget was modified during the year for professional services that essentially were not fully spent. I'm going to jump down a little bit and just focus on these ones. Public health, that middle of the page, the original budget was 6.9 million. The budget was modified to be 12.3. You actually came in at 6.2 million. So again, a $6 million budgetary savings. Again, that was for professional services that were not fully spent. The next line, contracted mental health, 8.9 million is your original budget, jumped up to 9.9, almost 10 million. Your actual just came in at 8.39. Again, budgetary savings.
Sorry, I'm going to go back.
Absolutely.
I just want to make sure I'm really clear about what we're talking about
here.
So the original budget, 6.9, the final budget, 12.3. So somewhere along the line, we said, we are going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and then we just didn't do it. Right, to the tune of $6.2 million.
Right? A combination of that, and as I said, the state and the federal government are in a different fiscal year, so some of those funds might be rolling forward.
Okay.
The finance department can let you know what they rolled forward as of January of 23,
All right.
which might be helpful to understand the variances.
Okay. All I'm getting at is, like, if we're saying we're going to do a bunch of things and then we don't do them, what are the reasons to the tune of $7 million, $6 million, you know? That would be interesting to look at and see if that's a habitual thing that we're doing or if that's exactly what you're talking about, adjustments between time periods or whatever.
My assumption would be, based on the fact that you didn't draw down from surplus monies to fund this, because Melissa pointed out that your appropriation of surplus by the legislative resolutions was only a few million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And this is $6 million. I would assume a lot of this is state and federal aid, that's why you have such a large variance on the federal aid side. We didn't put the state side on because the variance wasn't as large, but it's probably more grant related and unspent federal aid and state aid that you're looking at. It probably did roll forward, or some of it just programmatically you couldn't spend because maybe you couldn't find vendors, maybe the demand wasn't where you thought it was going
to
be.
To me, that's an interesting question.
It is. The variances are always interesting, and that's, so you have to do kind of a two-step. You have the actual variance, which is what we're showing you, but then you have to kind of go back to the department and say why.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If you jump two lines down, you can look at the DSS-related items, your social services administration, and your MMIS, both budgeted about $32.5 million. The budget was amended, and then the actual did come in lower. So still a budgetary savings. We did look at the lines. They were for professional services, and it's just we're not fully spent.
And the MMIS is the FMAP. If you remember, FMAP was the offset to your weekly shares report for the cost of Medicaid, and the state had warned, I think, counties that it was going to be reduced or pulled back. So you budgeted for it to be pulled back. It didn't occur really till July. So you can see that you didn't use all the budget because the state didn't adjust till July, but you can see that you spent more than last year. And the weekly shares is capped. So now you're at a higher level even for this year because the full year of the FMAP is gone. So.
Okay.
And the last item pertaining to this explanation would just be the home and community services other. Again, $379,000 jumped up to 1.2, only came in at $27,000. Again, for professional services, not fully spent. I do.
Okay. Can I just ask, do you detail in the transfers out, do you detail what that 11.9?
Yeah, so I do have it broken out. The 11.9 represents a $7.5 million transfer to capital for ban repayment, or ban pay down, rather. You have a $3.7 million transfer to capital related to the ARPA revenue. And then $633,000 transferred to UCDA, just the blended.
And that is in
the blended component unit, the fund of the county.
No, I know what it is. What was it for?
I believe. Was that the Tech City last
one? It was
one?
Definitely Tech City.
It was, I think on the UCDA financials, it was just called a capital contribution token.
And that is detailed in the bigger book.
If we jump up just back a couple lines, DPW buildings and grounds, you had about a $1.4 million, third line from the top, $1.4 million savings. Like Chris had mentioned, gas and electric prices were skyrocketing, so a conservative budget landed below expectations on that. If you jump down three lines, your public safety communication system. You had your final budget at 5.6. Your actual came in at 4.5. So it was a 1.1 savings. Your budget included some lines for equipment purchases, but the purchases ended up being much less than anticipated. So you had a savings. And then the UCAT, your Ulster County Area Transit. You did have an increased budget, both original and final. Your actual actually was consistent with the prior year. So I would say probably conservative budgeting at that point. So that would cover the expenditures. If we go to slide 8, this is going to be the 5-year history of the general fund balance. The 2022 is going to be the year that we audited, and then the years prior were done by the predecessor auditor. You have four different buckets here. So the first item is going to be your non-spendable section. Those are monies that are already essentially earmarked for other purposes, so they can't fall into unassigned. About $5 million into your prepaid expenditures, and then the $4 million in advances. That's the amount that relates to that Tech City East property that was sold. Because it is a long-term payment over several years, it's not considered current enough that we can put that into unassigned. But as the payments come in from UCEDA, that $4 million will fall into your unassigned and add to that as the payments happen. So that brings your total non-spendable to 9.4. The section bucket of the reserves is going to be your restricted fund balance. That would be for items that are legally restricted by third parties or contractually restricted. Your first item is your tax stabilization reserve. You can see it jumped from last year from 1.1 to 5.9. There was a resolution this year in 22 to increase that tax stabilization fund. So that was the main cause of the increase. Couple of smaller restrictions. You have your 911 phone surcharge that stayed relatively consistent. There was a drop in your future capital projects. Essentially, that reserve never went to get legislative approval, so we didn't feel it met the definition of what restricted fund balance would be.
It didn't. Okay. I mean, you're correct. It was an internal way that they were accounting for it, but it wasn't restricted.
Okay. If you'd want to do that, you could definitely go.
We could pass legislation creating restricted, which we're going to for a specific project, but
great,
thank you.
So that brings your total restricted to 10.2 million. Your assigned fund balance would be assigned internally. Your encumbrances would be your purchases on order, so those purchases that are earmarked haven't been made yet, but that will roll over into next year's budget. You have some sheriff and jail commissions, your tourism and convention, and then the last item there is your subsequent year's expenditure of the $5.5 million. This is included in your 2023 adopted budget of what you anticipate using for fund balance to balance out your 2023 budget.
Interrupt.
Sure.
What we've seen in some of our other county clients in the assigned category, because it's a very unusual time with the amount of money that came in during the COVID and then ARPA, we've seen some of the legislatures assign money for special purposes so that because your unassigned is so large, they've created money for possible state reductions in aid for future some capital projects. And the legislature has assigned that money so that they can use it going forward in a way that they see fit. So it might be something you want to consider for, you know, as this year end is winding down, is if your unassigned fund balance is still growing, you may want to assign some money. So if you look at Westchester and Orange, you can see that they assigned some money for specific purposes by the legislature to reduce the amount of unassigned, but it stays in that free category where you can use it.
Haven't we already done that?
Yeah, well, we have assignments contemplated and passed related to housing, but assignments, but our fund balance policy contemplates restrictions, not assignments. Mm-hmm. So we expect as a part of this budget, a significant amount of restrictions to be moved, $18 million in relation to two restricted funds, two separate restricted funds, 18 and 18, and then an increase to tax stabilization to bring us in compliance with our fund balance policy, which again speaks strictly to restricted funds,
okay.
not assigned.
So. Like I said, we've just seen it other places because it's just, unassigned has grown to an unusually large amount, mm-hmm. especially when you have a $28 million of ARPA money that next year is going to fall to fund balance because you have to.
Yeah, we had that conversation a bit about ARPA, depending on, you know, how the spending goes or how that, you know, where we end up making assigned funds if we need to do that as a tool. So we'll see.
So your unassigned ended up at 111 million. Your unassigned is your fund balance that's free and clear to be spent on county purposes. So that's up about 26 million from last year. So like we mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, your fund balance ended at 140.3 million. We went ahead and provided the unassigned as a percentage of the subsequent year's budget. So you're at 29.1%. Back in 2019, you were at 7%, so you were able to build up that unassigned.
And again, I think moving forward, it would be important to, I mean, we do this internally, but as a part of this reporting, to look at our unrestricted, since that's where it connects with our fund balance policy, to have a reflection on where we are with what's not restricted, in addition to unassigned. I mean, it's important information to know what percentage is unassigned, but it's critical for our compliance with our own internal policy to know what's unrestricted. Again, we know that internally, but it's our main reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. So the county does operate other funds. I've included in here other governmental funds. Your first fund is going to be your capital project fund. That would be housing your recording the activity for your major capital projects and the acquisitions. You can see you started at a deficit of 30.6 million. Revenues came in at 3.8, and then you had expenditures of 27 million. But you did have other financing sources, which were transfers and, I believe, bonds. Then that ended at a deficit of, again, 30.6 million. That is all unrestricted as a deficit, but you do have a $31.1 million ban outstanding. Just the way that governmental modified accrual accounting works, you're not allowed to recognize that revenue to offset that deficit, but you do have that ban payable outstanding to fund these projects.
Until it's converted to permanent financing, mm-hmm. It's just a balance sheet item.
The next column is going to be your debt service fund. That's to, you could utilize that fund balance to assist in future principal and interest payments. You started out at 2.4, you ended at 2.7. That's all essentially restricted. You could use that for any of your future bond payments that you may need to make. You have your special grants for your CDBG and your workforce investment grants, stayed approximately the same. Your county road and your road machinery, essentially for maintenance of your road and bridges and your equipment. You can see it jumped up a little bit, but they're all essentially assigned at that point. We went ahead and provided you a schedule of the debt service that you have, of your bonds. So these are all of your bonds outstanding as of December 31st, 22. We provided to you both your governmental activities, so you have the general obligations issued for the county, and then you're issued for the college, which totals to $89 million together. Then you also have your business type activities. Both are related to your tobacco, your UTASC essentially, and then there are some for your resource recovery agency. It does look like that you were able to take advantage. You did have some refunding bonds recently, not in 22, but in more recent years, so you were able to take advantage of the lower interest rates for those. And then on slide 11, this is going to be your debt service maturity schedule. So it's good to see this for planning purposes of what you're going to have to pay in the upcoming years. In speaking with Chris, it's really good to look at how much is going to be paid off in the next 10 years. So it looks like about 83% of the GO bonds for your governmental activities will be paid off, and 80% of the college GO bonds as well. So that's really good. And then in your November 23 issue, the county was rated a AA. So that concludes the financial portion of the presentation, but we do want to go over the management comments as well. So that's going to be housed in this document. So the first several pages of this document are just some required communications that were required to report to you. We did summarize the majority of those in the PowerPoint. Our opinion is going to be on page 12. This is the opinion over the internal control. And then the comment starts on page 13. So there are three levels of deficiencies that we're required to report on. The highest level would be a material weakness. That's a deficiency that we've noted that's material to the county, and we're required to report that. We do have one item that is considered a material weakness. It was something that we did bring up at the previous meeting in relation to the reconciliation of the Department of Social Services. It was a material number, so we felt like it was important to note that since it was, the reconciliation was not being done as of the fiscal year end. We are pleased to report that the reconciliation was complete, and we did implement that prior period as well as a current period adjustment. But I think it's important to note that we want to make sure the reconciliation is being done across all reimbursable programs, and it should be done on a regular basis. So just making sure that there's a formal policy that the county.
So when you say regular basis, what does that look like?
I would say definitely annually, at a minimum, for sure. The next level of deficiencies would be a significant deficiency. It's material, but not material enough to be a material weakness. We are happy to report we did not find any significant deficiencies. And then the lowest level would be a control deficiency. Those are generally best practices or things that we've identified that we just wanted to bring to your attention. So we did have some control deficiencies on page 14. So as part of our single audit or federal audit of the SNAP program, that's your Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, we do test the internal controls. We did identify some items that did not were not material enough to report a single audit finding. So the first item is signatures on applications. There should be two signatures, both the applicant signature and the caseworker signature on applications. So we identified two out of 25 cases were just missing the applicant signature, and one of the selections were missing the caseworker or the employee signature. So just making sure that the signatures are being obtained and maintained in the file. The next one is related to a conflict of interest form. Generally speaking, as practice stands right now, the worker assigned to a case is responsible to identify if they are related to the applicant. And then once that's identified, they would step back and then request another caseworker to take over that case. When we did inquire with the department, there was no formal policy to obtain an annual written conflict of interest form just to ensure that they're planning on the fact that they did not work on any cases that they were related to. So it would be great and best practice to implement that as well. The next item is cash receipts testing, just timeliness of deposits. We tested a random of five cash receipts that happened during the year. We noted one that was not deposited within a timely manner. Timely, as New York State recommends, is about 72 hours. This was just deposited in the next day, so it wasn't drastically late, but it is something that we want to make sure once cash gets received, whether it's check or any other type of receipt, should be deposited at the bank as soon as possible. On page 15, the Capital Projects Fund Old Receivable. There were two balances, $206,000 dating back to 2021, one balance about $7,600 dating back to 2020. We just wanted to bring that to your attention. It wasn't material enough for us to investigate further, but it is something that we want to make sure you continue your efforts of collection on. The Internal Service Fund's net position. This comment is essentially stating that the internal service funds for your self-insurance and your workers' comp insurance fund did have net position at the end of the year. I do have to update this dollar value, so I'll update that for the final. But you do have $3.2 million net position in your workers' comp fund and about $7.1 million in your self-insurance fund. Essentially, it's very difficult to adjust your premiums year over year to make up for the claims that are being incurred. You've already factored in your claims incurred but not reported in that fund itself. But there should be a smoothing, so you'd want to have a trend analysis over many years to determine if the premiums you're charging, both internally within your funds or the other municipalities participating in the fund, just to make sure that those are appropriate premiums. So just making sure that analysis is being done on a regular basis.
Can you repeat the other number? You said 3.2 million in the workers' comp fund.
Sure.
And how much in the self-insurance fund?
7.1.
7.1. And you're suggesting that we look over it on a historical sense. Did you look back over the course of the years?
So we did not. So essentially what we've noticed in the workers' comp fund is when I looked at 21, there was really no net position recorded. It seems like everything was being hung on the balance sheet. I think it was 60,000 or something overall, so it jumped up to 3.2 million.
From 60,000 to 3.2 million?
Mm-hmm. Yes. But it does fluctuate. So sometimes the participants will pay generally approximately the same premium. And this depending on how many claims are outstanding or if you have a large claim come in, you want to make sure you have some fund balance or net position in that fund because you don't really know what's going to come through in your claims. But you just don't want it to be too high that that it'll sit there for many years.
I was just going to ask the comptroller, has there been an announcement?
We're auditing that now, but the self-insurance, I don't believe there was anything in the internal service fund prior to this year. This is a new recommendation.
New
and
now there's 7.1, but there's nothing before?
Correct.
Should have been before.
Yeah.
It just wasn't being reflected there. So it's been, the 7.1 is accumulated over the last 5 years. Essentially, we have annual analyses. We do pay a company to perform the analysis annually.
Then
we've been trending. Basically, we estimate what the cost is going to be determined equivalent based on that. We've been overestimating every year for the past 5 years, which is why it's now ballooned up to 7.1.
So you're saying it didn't happen overnight, it just wasn't being reflected
Correct.
In a way that we could see it
yeah.
until right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to expect to see something from you.
Yeah, you'll see an audit probably end of January, early February.
Thank you.
And then the last control deficiency is related to the single audit, the timing of the single audit. Whenever you have a single audit, which is required if you've spent over $750,000 of federal expenditures, you're also required to submit that to the federal government through this data collection form submission. That is required to be reported either 30 days after receiving your finalized auditor's report, which is pending, or 9 months after your fiscal year. So essentially that would have been September 30th. So because since we're late, we wanted to make sure that that was in here. Obviously we would strive to meet that next year.
And was that the thing that were we gonna get dinged for that for any reason because we hadn't submitted it on a timely fashion?
I think that's probably what we were talking about last time. We haven't seen any.
Yeah, we haven't seen anybody dinged.
Correct.
To use your word.
All right. That's an official word, isn't it?
Right. But what happens is your sample has to go up the next year because you're considered a higher risk.
Right.
But
right.
It doesn't impact you either because your program is so large, you're already at that testing level.
Okay, got it.
And we've had several agencies reach out to us with explaining the situation, and they're all fine with it. They're just,
yep.
As soon as we had it, we can afford it, make them all great. And as far as all the things that's done, Melissa just went over, I mean, I've addressed all of this with the appropriate people and departments, so DSS with SNAP and with the analysis there. We've also talked to DOH because that particular deposit was with them, and we've talked about we're working on making sure that deposits are going more often. They were only coming over once a week, and if they come over once a week, then there's that chance of that 72 hours. Our policy states 48 hours. So we have to go by our policy, so it'll be more strict. The receivables, one was identified as having been paid. It was just recorded in the wrong place, so the miscellaneous open bill wasn't attached to that.
Okay.
So we have to close that out. The other one was already received in 23 in May. It was a lost check, and the third one we're still waiting on the department to get back to us.
Right.
The internal service funds.
being taken care of. And yeah, kind of know what has to be done there. So.
The next couple pages are just on the horizon, so these would be GASB statements that will be implemented in the upcoming years. 96 is very similar to 87, your lease standard, but this would be for your subscription-based contracts. So that would be for December 31st, 23. And then GASB 101 just came out, that's for compensated absences. That would be for 2024. In Appendix 1, we have the corrected misstatements. These would be the material journal entries that were posted. This doesn't include all the journal entries, just the material ones. So we've included that in our letter as well. Once we get the signed rep letter, we'll include that and then a flyer about ourselves. We did provide a supplemental for you. This would be all of the journal entries that were posted as part of the audit, both adjusting and reclassifying. So this is going to be everything here. And
I'll open the floor. Does anyone have any questions? Can we go back to leases payable? I still am not understanding that that is revenue. Those leases are all expenditures of the county,
mm-hmm.
And I totaled out the 3-1 forward, and I'm not coming up with the same number, so I think maybe I'm missing something.
I can answer. I did the same thing. I knew it. The number didn't look right to me either. I even, because I don't know if you're trust using my phone as a calculator, I actually asked Natalie to run it, and it comes out to 2.43.
Right.
That's what you got?
Yeah.
Yes, to go to the other line, the original issue number.
Thank you.
That I made the same mistake. I was questioning it myself because it didn't add up in my head. I still am struggling also with the part about it being revenue.
I'm struggling with
the numbers. The numbers at least. No.
There are revenue leases that I don't see captured here.
Correct. So the revenue leases would be a lease receivable. And a lease receivable is reported in the general fund itself. So if you look at the balance sheet in the general fund, it would be housed as a lease receivable, and then you would have an offset deferred inflow for that. So the revenue would be recognized over time. Just to touch on that real quick, if you go to page...
I think page 56 does your lease receivable.
Yes. So that would be 56, and then on your balance sheet on page 18 will show that. So about $209,000 in your lease receivable. For the lease payable portion, the governmental funds on the modified accrual basis, when you've issued, bonds are probably the easiest way to approach it. When you've issued a bond, you're receiving cash. So you would definitely debit the cash to increase the cash received. You have to credit something else. A long-term liability, like a bonds payable, is not allowed to be recorded on a modified accrual, so on your governmental funds. You still have to credit something to make your debits equal your credits to balance out. So the credit essentially would be a revenue item called bonds issued for the year. Once that bond gets issued, which you did have, if you look on page 21, you had 11.8 issued in this year. When you convert that from your modified accrual, which is considered short-term finance, like short-term resources, when you convert that to the full accrual, which is your government-wide statement, that's supposed to help you be able to compare it to a corporation, for example, where you have all of your capital assets get added on, all of your long-term debt gets added on. You would essentially debit that bonds issued on your fund level, and then you would credit your bonds payable at that point. Still a credit on both items, it's just the classification of it. We do provide reconciliations in here. So on page 23, it shows all of the entries that were posted during that GASB 34 conversion. And if you look towards the middle of the page, you can see general obligation bonds issued of 11.8, you have the premium associated with that, and then your lease is issued of 2.6. So we're essentially removing that revenue and then placing it as like a long-term liability on the full accrual basis.
No. I mean, for me, not a ton.
just trying to wrap my head around an expense as a revenue.
Okay.
It's very confusing.
All right. Again, as Melissa said, we mentioned it before, you issued on a capital fund, you show a deficit of $30 million because your bands haven't been converted to permanent financing. Government has two sets of books. One is the pay-as-you-go method, which is what you budget for. The other is to convert it to business. So these $2.6 million are the leases. Aren't recorded as liability, it's pay as you go. So you bought something this year, so you issued leases. So unfortunately on the general fund, it shows a revenue. Then we have to back that revenue out and convert it to a liability for the other set of books. So just like bonds, when you issue bonds, it doesn't make sense. I showed $10 million worth of revenue, I issued debt. But you issued it because you paid out that money in the current year. So to match the revenues of the expense, you had capital fund expenses of these leases for 2.6. In governmental, you show the revenue 2.6, and then every year you budget the lease payment. And it's a ridiculous way to do the accounting, but that's what government requires.
I can wrap my head around it in relation to bonds and issuing debt, but I can't wrap my head around it.
A lease is the same thing. You lease the car.
But we're not leasing a car. We're paying a monthly bill.
But, right, and same thing with the debt. You're only paying it off semi-annually. So, you know, it's not the right way to do it, but it is the way government requires it to be done.
I mean, it's the first year that we're doing it, and I think that's why it's so confusing to everybody, and I think over time it'll become more clear. You know, I understand the bond treatment, and I think because this is new, it's harder for us to...
Yeah, if you had issued leases out of your capital fund in the past, it would have been a lease revenue then,
right?
Because your capital fund, you're used to seeing it. Yeah. You're just not used to seeing it in the operating budget. Anything in the capital fund, we all know, is long-term because people have issued leases out of their capital budget for years and they record the lease revenue. You're not seeing it. It's just because it's in the general fund. It doesn't make sense.
I dread the subscription-based software.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Do a one-year lease and you don't have to record it.
Yeah.
Do it on an annual basis and you don't have to record it.
This is like all our IT subscriptions. All
yes.
That's going to be a lot.
So if we stop taking out bands, we can avoid this?
Well, no, bands, again, it kind of flies exactly in the face of what I just said. You borrow money and now you record the revenue. Bands, they don't call it revenue until you convert it to permanent. So when you take out a short-term note, it says debit cash, credit bands payable, which is what you should see. But bonds, on the other hand, you record that revenue the minute you borrow. You don't record your mortgage as revenue on your own personal finances. You debit cash your credit I owe the bank. Here you know, you debit cash and you credit revenue. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever, but that's the way government does it.
Okay. I'd like to ask about GASB 101 compensated absences. You know, this is going to come into effect next year, and we currently do not have a process of monthly accruals. It's something that the comptroller's office has been very focused on because we think that is what is required under our collective bargaining agreements. And I'm just wondering if you have any advice for us on compensated absences. Have you had other counties move for compliance with GASB 101 already? And have you seen any hiccups or everybody's waiting till the last minute?
Everybody's waiting till the last minute. Always our counties.
I know at the GFOA conference, the annual conference last year, somebody from GASB was there presenting, and there were a lot of questions by the people who are in attendance that were from the municipalities. And they had a lot of questions about how, if they're using the leave towards retirement years, how is that going to apply to this? And they didn't really have an answer for it either. So I don't think that they've necessarily may have considered all of the possibilities, especially maybe in New York State, since GASB is for the whole nation. So,
do you think we'll see additional guidance or a movement of that deadline?
Generally, I wouldn't imagine a movement of the deadline, but what they'll generally do is once it's implemented, hopefully leading up to it, they'll issue some implementation guidance. but we usually see some Q&As issued after the implementation, and so we just keep an eye out for that and try to write some thought leadership that we can definitely provide to you.
Yeah.
And hopefully the state controller's office comes out with some guidance for counties.
That would be nice.
Right. Before your reports.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Thank you. Thank you very much.
What grade did we get? Did we get a B plus, an A minus? Where do we end up?
All right. This is the presentation of the draft. We don't move to accept the draft. This is the draft, but we will receive the final with the dated. So is there any new business?
I have some new business. In our work inside the controller's office on identifying internal controls recommendations, it's really become clear to us that, and this is really speaking to the record for next year, but we're hoping to get it in the minutes for this meeting, that we've typically attended Ways and Means meetings, reported to Ways and Means. The audit committee, as it is defined in the administrative code and the charter, has a very narrow set of responsibilities only with respect to the external audit. And that really leaves there as no committee with jurisdiction per se over our internal controls recommendations and others that we think that we're going to be getting from Office of State Controller coming forward in 2024. So we would just urge that this committee meet on a more periodic basis, maybe quarterly, and address some of the internal controls recommendations and policy changes rather than pushing them all through the Ways and Means Committee or us searching for an appropriate committee. I'll give you an example. After the November election and the passage of Prop 4, bank reconciliation responsibility is going to transfer from our office to finance, ostensibly as of the first of the year, which I think none of us are ready for. The bank reconciliation policy is going to have to be updated, and I think we struggled in the past with trying to figure out which committee was the appropriate committee of jurisdiction. So I think I just wanted to say here that we think it would be helpful to have this committee convened on a quarterly basis to review internal audits that have come forward, to review potential recommendations from outside agencies, and to be the committee of jurisdiction over internal control policies that need to be moved through the legislature.
I think I'm just going to respond, and I'm obviously not going to be here in this capacity, but the challenge that we face is what you led with, is that this committee's jurisdiction is defined and limited by the charter. And something like bank reconciliation seems really squarely a Ways and Means initiative. Something like you're talking about, that should go to Ways and Means. I would say to the next body, seems reasonable quarterly meetings of this committee potentially, but it also is going to potentially, a charter revision might be necessary to expand the scope of this committee, if so. But in the meantime, I think things, going to have to look for the appropriate committees to send those things to. And again, bank recs seems really clear to me, Ways and Means.
If I could follow up just to say that we have a responsibility not just to report to management and the county executive office on, you know, internal controls recommendations and a lack thereof in certain places, but the body charged with governance, and that is the legislature. So there needs to be some way to capture those going forward. And, you know, we see the Ways and Means agendas, you know, they're 1,800-page packets and, you know, dozens and dozens of resolutions each month. So I urge consideration of that moving forward, and also question whether the committee is narrowly limited to what is in the charter or whether the administrative code could be broader and could assign additional duties. So there may be another way to handle it. Yeah.
Is there any old business? Hearing none?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.